Hello, I'm Debbie.
And I'm Alan.
And we are your hosts of Left of Liberal, a program and a Facebook page we created. It's called Left of Liberal with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. There are several Left of Liberals, so look for the white peace poppy and you'll find us. We have a contact number of 512-517-2708. And an email at leftofliberal@outlook.com.
One of the main reasons we have undertaken doing this program, Left of Liberal, is because we feel very strongly peace and disarmament are central to most working class issues and form the basis for pulling together a massive, broad-based, all-people's front comprising liberals, progressives, and leftists, and many other people, irrespective of class, but the left oriented towards working class issues focused on anti-imperialism is going to be the catalyst in educating and organizing this All People's United Front for Peace and Disarmament, for equality and social and economic justice, with socialism on the table now, not later.
And we also have a guest on the program, Stuart Alexander. And are you on here, Stuart?
Yes, I am, and I would like to express my appreciation that you invited me to come on the program to talk about Socialist CAN, Socialist Connection Action Network.
And when is your program?
Socialist CAN, Socialist Connection Action Network. It's on, and the program is called Socialist CAN, 1 hour left. It comes on every Wednesday, and that's Wednesday, 6 o'clock Pacific and 9 o'clock Eastern, and it is a program dealing with many issues from a left perspective. You and Alan are on as regular guests, and also Matt Owen, and we deal with many subjects dealing from national issues to international issues, and many of the policies, I should say misdirected policies, that are taking place on a daily basis in Washington, D.C.
Okay, we're going to get into the discussion about Socialist Connection Action Network in a few minutes. First, we want to have a little news, and Debbie wants to say something about a memorial service we were at yesterday.
Yeah, we went to, I guess he's a very influential person who passed away in Austin, and there was a memorial tribute for Kwanzaa Evans. It was at the Kenny Dorham's backyard. It's also a backyard that used to be belonged to one of the people that were speaking there, and he was Kwanzaa was very influential in helping people in Austin, poor people. This is an area where this backyard was, it used to actually be this guy's backyard, the one that was speaking, all around this backyard, there are condos and apartments that have popped up. They have through gentrification moved the poor people out of their homes, and to build these, but he has managed to keep a hold of this little backyard. It has food trailers and a stage for performances of bands, and there was a couple very nice bands there. Well, I guess it was one band, but they had a couple singers. But it's on Alan's Facebook page if you want to listen to some of the music. But there, it was a nice tribute to this man who had done a lot for the poor people in Austin.
And I guess we should talk a little bit about the main thing that's been in the news for the past week or so, and that's the situation in Iran. And we have Trump and all these warmongers just itching for war. They're trying every conceivable way to instigate war with Iran.
And Stuart might want to be in this conversation, too.
Yeah, because it relates to Socialist CAN and why we need a large socialist movement in this country. But, you know, the pathetic thing is the Democrats are jumping right on this, too, and they're actually egging Trump on as much as some of the big warmongers like John Bolton and Pompeo and all these people. So it's a very dangerous situation that I think that we're in right now. Do you have any thoughts on it, Stuart?
I believe, as you just mentioned, Alan, that the Democrats are just as deep in this this situation with Iran as the Republicans. John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, both of them are warmongers, and they have been chosen by this administration to be able to continue the U.S. Aggression there in the Middle East. It's very interesting when Trump, I shouldn't say interesting because I don't find anything interesting at all about Donald Trump, but when he was running as a candidate for president, he was mentioning his goal was to reduce Americans' presence there in the Middle East, and he has only ramped it up even more so. I don't think anyone could really do much more than what Obama was doing, short of just going to war with countries there in the Middle East. But here, using a false flag, where it has been no evidence showing that Iran was involved in the explosive attacks on those two Japanese vessels, and within a matter of hours, the U.S. came to the conclusion that Iran was guilty of sabotaging those two vessels. Since then, the U.S., a further escalation of those events, the U.S. sent a spy plane not only over the territorial waters of Iran, but they actually sent the spy drone right over the Iranian territory. And then, after they were within their international right of shooting down the spy mission over their territorial areas, then the U.S. is in a position where they want to declare an act of military aggression against the U.S. by Iran. That's, I don't know how you could actually make it so obvious that you're really just trying to pick a fight. And that's what the U.S., what they have done. I believe that the only reason why we did not go to war within those, within that last 30 minutes or so with Iran is because the Russians said that was would have been a catastrophic mistake for the U.S. to actually take action against Iran. So that's the only reason, because Russia is actually an ally of Iran. Other than that, they would have already been bombing the hell out of Iran. And I think most of the people that are in most of the people that are here in the U.S., because let's face it, a growing number of people here in this country, they not only don't agree with this administration, they don't believe with the Democrats or the Republicans, and a growing number of people within this country are moving even further to the left and believing that, you know, we need to have socialism as opposed to capitalism and imperialism, which is proven to be a complete failure.
And this brings us to our discussion tonight about the Socialist Connection Action Network. And maybe you can, it's sort of your, you developed the whole concept, Stuart. So maybe you can sort of just explain what was on your mind when you thought of this. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, where we think we're going with it. And letting people know that we are having an international meeting here in Austin, Texas, on August 10th at the Live Oak Unitarian Church from 8 a.m. in the morning until 6 p.m. in the evening. It'll be our first national meeting. So if you can just explain a little bit about you know, what you were thinking when you developed this concept of the Socialist Connection Action Network?
Well, Alan and Deborah, I appreciate you inviting me to come on to speak in regards to the Socialist Connection Action Network. The concept of putting this together and forming this group started in August of last year. I was a member for quite a few years and had run as a candidate for a vice president and also a candidate for president for the Socialist Party USA. I've been involved with the Freedom Socialist Party. I've been involved with the Peace and Freedom Party and other left groups here on the West Coast and also nationally. One of the things forming Socialist Connection Action Network, I believe that many of the left groups that are existing today, many of them have become somewhat like social clubs. It's a lot of big issues out there. Even when I was a member of the Socialist Party USA, they had a platform which I agree with 100% as far as what the goals and objectives that they have outlined. I agree with those goals and objectives, but I didn't see where that organization was being progressive enough, where it was reaching out to have a radical agenda to address many of the social concerns that we have in the working class. Concerns to speak out in regards to jobs, education, to speak out in regards to many of the needs for our senior citizens, youth unemployment, militarism, where we see that we're spending hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars on U.S. military buildup in this country. Those things are not even being addressed. Now, I understand that these groups are small, but we're not even speaking up. We're basically, they have organizations that have reached out, they are networking, but is not an active agenda where it is calling people to action to be able to rise up against what is taking place in this country. My idea was in forming and putting together Socialist Can in August of last year, I wanted to reach out to people that are interested in organizing within a left group, people that were interested in being able to express their ideas, similar ideas regarding many of those issues and concerns that I just mentioned, and where we could be able to pull together our resources, be able to pull our collective energies, and be able to organize on a national level. Since then, the group has been very effective, where we have gotten a site, which is, a Facebook presence. In addition to that, we are in the process of putting together a website, which we'll have within the next 6 to 8 weeks. And in addition to that, we're going to be having our first national organizing conference, where we're going to have individuals coming together to meet each other for the first time within this group, and also to be able to organize how we can be able to expand on a national level. I believe that right now, even though we're a small group, we still can be very effective if we actually make our presence known, make our voices known within the political conversation that is now on a national level, that right now other groups have chosen not to speak and to remain silent.
Yeah, it seems to me one of the big problems is the left groups in this country have sort of allowed the Democratic Party to lead them around. And when I say that, I'm talking about this guy named George Lakoff, who's the main He's a linguist, and he's the person that is mostly responsible for directing Democratic Party policy right now. And what he says is that we should be concerned with progressive policy directives, but never talk about specific solutions to specific problems. And I think this is one of the big problems that I see in the left today. You know, people seem to be afraid to advocate for their for solutions to their own problems. If you take Social Security, which we and Socialist Ken have been talking about, you know, it's very simple. One of the main problems is people are poor because of these miserly Social Security checks. So the solution is to give people a raise. We've suggested $500 or $600. You know, nobody on Social Security should get less than $2,700. With the student loans, they put forth this grand notion of they're going to get rid of all the student debt. I believe it's just an election gimmick. Well, and I say that because they don't start with the specific solution to the very real pressing problem right now, and that's these garnishments of people's wages and Social Security checks, mostly poor people again. And, you know, unless we deal with these very specific problems, we're not going to be able to move forward, I don't think.
Let me add in here, too, that it's not actually a conference with speakers or anything, but it'll be more of just a roundtable discussion for anybody
right.
that wants to be involved with it, just a meeting with a roundtable discussion.
We have certain objectives and goals that we have laid out. I should say objectives. I'll replace that word with demands. One of those demands is that we believe, as you had mentioned, Alan, about Social Security. Most people, that what they receive, the meager Social Security income that they receive, cannot even take care of their basic needs. It cannot even take care of just food allowance for many people. We are calling for a $500 minimum increase for all people that are receiving Social Security benefits. In regards to what you said about education, we believe that education, it should be free, and we should cancel all the student debt. And what you hear from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, they don't lay out anything specific. Basically, what they're doing is they're calling for to address this $1.5 trillion that you have in regards to student debt, but they don't really lay out any plans of how they're going to eliminate the student debt that is currently existing. We have, within Socialist CAN, Socialist Connection Action Network, we have always have stated that reducing student debt and eliminating student debt should be tied to reducing the military spending within this country. Right now, we have over $700 billion that is being spent on military spending every year. We have well over $2 trillion that is being spent on defense funding. So for us to address, even for when we look at student debt, that $1.5 trillion, we should tie that in to reducing a rapid reduction in military spending. And one of the other demands I'll mention that we have is increasing the minimum wage. Right now in this country, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Let me repeat that. That's $7.25 an hour. Some states still have that as their minimum wage. We believe that not only doubling it, but we are calling for a $16 minimum wage. It's really interesting. Many states have decided not to even try to wait on these lame politicians in Washington, D.C. Many states have already moved to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Some cities have already done that. And here we got all of these lame legislators, these legislators in Washington, these senators, and they won't even bring up the subject. So, again, as I mentioned, with our group, at least we are speaking out on those issues. One other thing I'll mention, I would like to just mention something that you had stated, Alice, is that when you look at the legislation in Washington, D.C., and the Democrats over the last 50 years or so, they've always been a group, a political party, to absorb left movement. Always. Progressive movement, if it's a progressive movement out there, you can be sure that the Democrats already have put a target on that group. Case in point, here you got Black Lives Matter. The Democrats in Washington, they are already making certain that they're buying that group out. I was a member, I was the vice president of the NAACP South Bay branch here in California. That organization, they wanted to make certain that you never spoke out in regards to anything that was controversial. If it was any issues in regards to racial issues, they wanted to make certain that you stayed within those parameters, that they wouldn't lose any of their funding. So the Democrats have done quite well over the last 50 years to silence every and any group that is progressive.
You know, they've done that with these foundation-funded outfits that funnel little bits of money here and there to keep people quiet. And
exactly, and I mean they have done this with, I mean every group they do it with politicians. If you're a politician that is willing to stay within the rank and file of the Democrats, they'll make certain if they're going to, if first they allow you to associate with the group, but if they find that you're one that will buy into their the party rhetoric, then you may even get funding. And also you may be allowed to achieve some position there within Congress. But if you speak out against anything that is basically that is not within, in line with what the party, what their agenda is, You chances are you may be just a one-term candidate. You have Ilhan Omar. That's the situation that you have with her. Chances are they're going to be making certain that she doesn't remain there in Washington past her first term.
Right.
The Trump, I guess, made a statement. I guess it must have been to the press when he was, going to the helicopter, like he does usually when he's passing by, that the minimum wage was too high. He said $7.50 is too much. Now I don't know how accurate this was that I was reading, but he's trying to bring the minimum wage down so that we can bring jobs back to the United States and be able to compete with the low wages of other countries, which is a shame.
That's true. I mean, you have not only is the executive branch, but the legislative branch all are on the same page of making certain that they suppress the minimum wage and keep it exactly where it's at. I was on radio Fox programming, and I guess that's a bad word on this program, but I was invited as a guest, and I was speaking in regards to, at the time, I was calling for doubling the minimum wage, and the minimum wage then was still $7.25. It hasn't increased for almost a decade now, but I was calling for doubling it. But very interesting, on the same programming, I'm not certain if it was Fox Business or Fox News, Forbes was on, and he was speaking in regards to the minimum wage and also whether it should be increased, because that was one of the questions that was presented to me during that time slot that I was speaking. And they were asking him how much should the minimum wage be, and he had stated that he thought the minimum wage was too high. And they said, well, what should it be? He said, well, I think it should be far lower than what it is. And they were asking, how low should it be? He said, well, whenever people don't work, then that's when you make certain that's the dollar amount that you set on what the minimum wage should be. And the commentators say, well, should it be a dollar? He said, well, yes, it's a dollar. If they work for a dollar, let them work for that.
Yeah, let him do his own work.
One of the things I'll mention in regards to why the Republicans and Democrats, they represent Wall Street. And whenever you suppress the wages of the workers, the wages that you suppress of the workers are the profits for the owners of the factories and the corporations and the shareholders. That's their profits.
Yeah, that reminds me. I was at a meeting where Minnesota Governor's Tim Pawlenty was speaking, and there was a packed meeting. And the owner of a supermarket started talking about all these lazy people that come in and buy their food with food stamps. And so I got up and I said, who gets the profits from all these food stamps in the long run? And he shut up real quick. You know, but this is the way these people that have money think. And, you know, it's the same way with employers. There's never a wage that's ever too low for them, but there's always a wage that any wage that they pay is always too high. And, you know, we got to break free from that mindset.
So I just like to clarify, when I say Socialist Connection Action Network, one of our demands is $16 an hour. I don't think $16 an hour is enough. I think it should be tied to, income should be tied to a living wage. In other words, you need to have an income when you work a job where you can be able to afford to pay your bills, where you can be able to afford to live on that income that you're receiving. So when you say $16 an hour or $15 an hour, or doubling the $7.25 an hour that people receive right now, that's still not saying that it's enough, but it should be tied to a living wage is what it should be.
You know, the way Frances Perkins explained it, she was Franklin Roosevelt's Secretary of Labor and developed the whole minimum wage legislation and everything. She said that the legislation was nowhere near enough, but it was the best that they could get with a divided Congress and everything. Lots of Democrats even opposed it, along with the Republicans at the time. But her thinking was that the minimum wage should eventually, and she said very shortly, that was way back in the 1930s, should be tied to the actual cost of living. So she foresaw a situation where the Department of Labor would compile the actual cost of living figures, and the minimum wage should be tied to the cost of living. And, you know, she saw it as being legislatively tied to the cost of living after the United States Department of Labor calculated those figures. And that's really what it should be, because when you think about it, why should anybody have to work at any job for less than it costs them to live? You know, this is just total stupidity. And like I told, I was testifying in Manitoba before the Manitoba Provincial Legislature Committee, and I told them, you know, they said, well, you want wages to be too high. I said, you know, what's too high? I said, if the employers don't want to pay a worker a living wage to do the job that employer needs to have done, then let the employer do the work himself, or let his family do the job, let his kids and wife do those jobs, you know. And some of them says, well, geez, we never thought about it in those terms. But, you know, nobody talks about wages in relation to cost of living and our standard of living. That was something that unions always talked about back in the 1930s. I know I read some of the literature from Wyndham Mortimer, who was one of the organizers for the United Auto Workers Union. And he said the most important thing that union organizers should always talk about is the relationship between wages and cost of living and the standard of living, the way you live. And he said that constantly has to be talked about. And today, you know, we don't see labor leaders talking about wages in relation to the cost of living. We haven't even seen these people that put forward the $15 an hour initiative. They never mentioned wages in relation to cost of living. And I think that that's just totally wrong, that, you know, the way to frame this issue is how much does it cost to live, and that should be the minimum of what wages should be.
And it varies depending on what part of the country that you're in, but it should be, as you mentioned, it should be tied into the cost of living. What the cost is living in California, in Los Angeles, is different, far different, from what the cost of living is there in the Bay Area, such as San Francisco or Oakland. If you're from Louisiana, the cost of living is different there. But I think there should be a minimum that we can extend to any part of the country as far as having some type of basic minimum wage that we should have nationwide. One of the things I found very interesting, this was two to 3 years ago, and when Elizabeth Warren, when she was running for Senate, and one of the things she had mentioned is that the minimum wage, when you looked at the real minimum wage, it should have been $22.50 an hour. $22.50. When was the last time you heard Elizabeth Warren calling for a $22.50 minimum wage? When have you heard Bernie Sanders calling for raising the minimum wage? When have you heard Cory Booker talking about raising the minimum wage to where people can be able to afford to pay their bills? You don't hear any of these candidates that are running for public office even addressing the minimum wage at $7.25 an hour, which is nothing but it's only poverty. That's poverty wages.
I think a lot of the confusion over the minimum wage comes from people not understanding that there's a difference between a wage increase and raising the minimum wage to a real living wage based on the cost of living. You know, everybody appreciates a wage increase. You know, I appreciate it if I get 25 cents an hour more, but that's not the point. The point is, when you're talking about the minimum wage, you're talking about a piece of legislation and what that piece of legislation should do. And that legislation should eliminate poverty when it comes to the minimum wage. The whole idea behind working, I mean, why do most people work? They don't want to be poor, right? And, you know, if you look at these billionaires, these Wall Street capitalist oligarchs, like the Warren Buffetts and his partner Charlie Munger. I don't know if you ever heard Charlie Munger talk from his partners in Berkshire Hathaway with Warren Buffett. But he owns all these Dairy Queens, and he cries like a baby if anybody talks about raising the minimum wage. He is paying the minimum wage all over the United States. He's paying poverty wages to people in countries around the world that work at Dairy Queens. And this guy, you listen to him on the news, he's 95 years old, he's got billions and billions of dollars, and he cries like a baby if any of these journalists ask him about raising the minimum wage. And yet he's made his billions of dollars off of paying people poverty wages, and these people do not want to acknowledge that, and that's what we got to begin to talk about.
Let me break in here a minute and just say you're listening to Left of Liberal with host Alan and Debbie Mackey. We have our guest on here, Stuart Alexander, and do you want to tell about your Facebook page and the meeting, Stuart?
Well, the Facebook page is Socialist Connection Action Network, and we call ourselves Socialist CAN. Our group was formed August of last year, and since then we have had continuous growth and expansion within the group. We're looking at within the next 6 to 8 weeks where we will be having a website page for the group, and that way it can be more interactive where people can get involved. We have our first national meeting where we're going to be inviting people that are members, and also you don't have to be a member to participate, where you can come and see how you can get involved with a left progressive group where you can help us to expand what we're doing on a national level. It'll be there in Austin, Texas. It'll be on August 10th. And also it will be an all-day event starting at 8 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock that night. And we would definitely like to invite all to come and participate.
And that's at the Live Oak Unitarian Universalist Church. Tell us about your program that you have on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, we come on every Wednesday. It's Socialist Can, 1 hour left. Basically, it's 1 hour of left conversation. We have three people on the panel and myself, Deborah Allen, and also we have Matt Owen. And on the program, we discuss various topics from a very left perspective. And this is to where people are not only listening to the corporate media, but they can be able to participate in the program and be able to understand what is taking place on a national level and an international level, not just hearing it, as I mentioned, from the corporate media. We come on every Wednesday, 6 o'clock Pacific, and also it's 9 o'clock Eastern, and that's Socialist Can, 1 hour left.
And wait, if you go on Socialist Can, the Facebook page, you'll see the event, the first thing in the list as you scroll through. It's the event is Socialist Can Make a Difference. And let us know if you are interested or if you can come so we can know how many to plan for.
And let us know if you have ideas about all of this, too, so we can consider everything that all of you have to say. Maybe we should talk a little bit about socialism too, Stuart, because a lot of groups on the left, it's like they call themselves socialist and communist and everything, but they never seem to talk too much about socialism.
Right. And socialism, Richard Wolff was just on his regular program. He has a blog program that comes on weekly, and he was talking about the three different types of socialism, and he's a left-leaning economist. But as you mentioned, a lot of people don't understand what socialism is about. Socialism is about workers being able to control production within their community. It's about controlling what is taking place in regards to how your various civic activities, your various levels of government, state and federal, making certain that you have representation, those representation that are representing the people. People should be the ones that actually have, that are actually in control of what is taking place and making the decisions on what is affecting their lives, whether it's in the schools, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in government. Workers should be the ones that are the ones making the decisions on what is affecting and also governing their lives. We, within the Socialist Connection Action Network, we do welcome communists, people that are communists, to be involved with our organization. I might mention that communism is a part of socialism. It's actually a truer source of socialism than what we have here in the United States, and it's designed to give better representation of what you have under capitalism. Capitalism is all about the elite, people that own the factories, not the workers, but people that own the factories. People that actually own the government. They own the people that go there to Washington. That's why they have lobbyists. The lobbyists are making certain that they have the representatives that they send to Washington, that they keep them in line. So quite to the contrary, as socialists, we believe the people that we send to Washington will represent our interests in government. People that we have to represent us in the international community that they will represent our interests on an international level, whether it's involving trade, whether it's involving anything in regards to military actions or conflict. And I might mention, when I say military, obviously I'm not of that thinking that we cannot completely eliminate a military for a country. But the thing is, as socialists, we don't believe that war should be for profit. And that's what capitalism is about. War and militarism is big business within a capitalist economy. We are spending trillions of dollars on the military-industrial complex in this country. That's a crime. That is an international crime. When you're building weapons, we are building, this country is building weapons to be used on other nations, and lives become something that's expendable. So that's one of the areas that we are very concerned with when we look at as socialists, is that we should have a sharp reduction in military spending, and military spending should only be used for defense. It should not be used for aggression. And that is exactly what has taken place there in Washington, D.C. today.
Yeah, even the Democrats, I've just been listening to them today, and they're all saying that the United States is responsible for maintaining international law, and that the Straits of Hormuz, it's up to the United States to keep that open and everything. This kind of outlook is just, you know, it's pushing us closer and closer to war, because, you know, who made the United States the one responsible for enforcing international law? I've never heard any of the countries in the world agree with that.
Well, it's very interesting what happened just recently, how this agreement that was between Iran and over 50 other countries, where it was to a reduction in Iran's production of military uranium, where it could be used for peaceful purposes as opposed to military purposes. The U.S. was the first country that actually violated that. They were the first country that violated it. Other
right.
countries, including many of the European countries, they were very opposed to the U.S. Backing out of that agreement. But Bolton and also Pompeo, along with Trump, they were justified in backing out of it because they didn't like the agreement the way it was written. Well, here's an agreement that was signed on by much of the rest of the international community. And here, just because we didn't like, the U.S. did not like the way that agreement was drafted and signed by other countries, we backed out. We violated that, and then we wanted to put additional sanctions on Iran, which we are in the process of trying to enforce those sanctions and impose even greater sanctions on Iran. This is something that needs to be spoken out, because we can't not rely on the Democrats to speak out in regards to matters like this.
I guess he,
what I see, do you see any other countries that are, any other organizations, socialist organizations, that are even speaking out on that?
I guess Trump today did sign the executive order to add more sanctions to Iran.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. But he says it's not going to hurt the Iranian people. It's going to be directed. It's going to be directed. Going to be directed more at the supreme leader, or the higher ups. But I don't know how it's not going to hurt the Iranian people.
Sanctions and tariffs hurt the working people. That's what they do. And what they are designed to do is to have where people will actually rise up against their government.
Yeah, and the sanctions, I don't think that people completely understand them, because Trump says he's placing sanctions on Iran, but what he's really doing is ordering other countries not to do business with Iran, and this is creating a real problem. And that's not being talked about like it should be, very publicly. You know, the European countries, Russia, China, all these countries, they want to do business with Iran, and they want Iran to do business with them. And so when Trump places these sanctions, essentially what he's saying is that if you do business with Iran, you're going to be in violation of the law too. And, you know,
exactly.
Like what happened to this woman from the Chinese company.
Ms. Ming.
And how many other people is Trump going to try and arrest on foreign soil who aren't even American citizens because he claims that they're in violation of the sanctions that he's imposing on Iran? You know, this is where this leads. And the more he pushes, the closer we get to, a big war being sparked. And I don't think people realize the seriousness of the situation.
And then him ordering an attack last Thursday on Iran, and then calling it off 10 minutes before the attack was supposed to happen, like he's the hero that saved the day.
Yeah, after creating the problem.
They also are saying today that he's influenced by the mainstream media, and that about the same time Tucker Carlson was making a commentary saying that war is no good. And some people are saying that maybe he influenced Trump, since Trump always listens to Tucker.
Well,
and that's a shame. That's a shame.
Well, I find it interesting that you have the U.S. and Israel and Saudi Arabia trying to ask Iran to come to the table so that they can discuss with them in regards to trying to have some type of open dialogue in regards to how they can resolve the issues with Iran. Well, this was already discussed months ago by, as I mentioned, the signatures of other countries that had signed on to that, saying that they wanted to agree with Iran to reduce their buildup of any type of nuclear materials that could be used potentially for warfare. And of course, they were using it only for peaceful purposes. But now the U.S., I believe personally that the U.S. is really being influenced by Saudi Arabia and also being influenced by Israel in regards to the interests of those two countries. I mean, let's look at Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, I mean, here, when you look at any type of humanitarian issues, Saudi Arabia is right at the bottom of the list. I mean, it's the worst country as far as human rights violations. Look at what they have done in Yemen. It's a country that has been involved in terrorist activities throughout the Middle East. Look at the poor record of Israel and what they have done, you know, against the people of the Palestinians and what they have done in Gaza. This is, when you look at socialist camps, these are things that we talk about on a regular basis. When you look at Socialist Can 1 Hour Left, we talk about these things every week because we believe that people should be in the know. They should know what is taking place with this government and what is taking place in the international community that is not being talked about on a regular basis. It's not being talked about at all as far as what I can see.
This is one of the purposes of Socialist Can. We're a little group right now, but can small groups of people have any kind of influence, Stuart?
What was that again?
I said, can small groups have any kind of influence?
I believe a small group can be very effective. All you need is less than a dozen people that really can agree in regards to what needs to be done to bring about change And I believe even a small group can do that. Here, we already have people indicating that they would like to start organizing for Socialist Can on the East Coast. They're in Pennsylvania. I've had people from Virginia have indicated that they want to organize. People in Louisiana. We're not asking for people to try to organize big meetings. The only thing we're asking is for get together with friends there in your local communities, people that you know from small groups that you have, people that you know from Facebook, people that you just communicate with that is maybe right next door to you. And right now what we have done over the last, within the last few months, we have what we call our breakfast locals, where we ask you to get together with one or two other people once every 2 to 3 months and just sit down and talk about what we're doing in our community within the Socialist Can. And then bring to the larger group what you're doing. So, you know, you can be effective. We have seen this when you talk about small groups with the Tea Party here in the United States within the last election when Obama, when he was running for as a candidate, we saw a small group explode where it was nationwide. I don't agree with their politics, but they were very effective. We saw Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, he started organizing, you know, for people that were his supporters, and he had over 12 million people that were supportive of his campaign in the last election. In 2016. I don't believe that he'll be able to win in this next contest, but it started with small groups. And also, and the reason why I mentioned Bernie Sanders, first Bernie Sanders was meeting with groups of like 100 to 200 people. Those groups grew up to like 10 and 15, 20 and 30,000 people.
Right.
From small groups. So we can be very effective starting as a small group. I believe it's very crucial, as I mentioned earlier, having first we have a Facebook page, but we need to have something beyond Facebook. We have our own website where people will be able to see what type of events that are taking place. They'll be able to see various blog posts that, Alan, that you'll be contributing to the website. They'll be able to listen to many of the programs that have been on Socialist Can 1 hour left. They will be able to see when we have various meetings in whatever cities and towns. They'll be able to see what individuals are doing on a local level, whether it's any type of rallies or events that they are participating in. They will have contact information where they'll be able to reach us, whether it's through emails, making phone calls. They'll see many of the people that are participating within the group. And I think it will help us to move to another level within Socialist Connection Action Network, where to help us to expand the membership.
Yeah, I can remember back in the days with the movement against the Vietnam War, you know, we would... just a handful of people would come together in a living room wondering what we're going to do about all this. And we'd start to study up on the history of Vietnam and everything. And eventually we'd start writing letters to the editor. And these were just small groups of people. And then we said, well, we got to do something. And we went out and had a little demonstration. There were maybe a dozen people with signs at the federal building. And then these things grew and grew and grew. And but it was all started with little groups of people just mostly meeting in living rooms or in church basements, sometimes in union halls and community centers. But very seldom did you see large numbers of people initially. It was always small, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe a dozen people. Was a dozen people. We were real happy to get a dozen people at meetings back in the mid 60s opposing Vietnam War. And then as it, you know, as we got out there and made our opinions known, we found lots of people that agreed with us. And the movement just grew all across the country in the same way. So we small groups of people can make a difference.
Okay, so we have about 3 minutes left. Do you want to tell about the meeting in August and your show on Wednesdays?
Socialist Can, 1 hour left. It comes on every Wednesday, and it's Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific, and it's 9 o'clock Eastern. We always have our panelists come on. We address various issues and things in government politics from a left perspective. Our regulars on the program is Alan Mackey, Deborah Mackey, and also Matt Owen. Just to pull up the program, you can actually Google if you want to hear some of the oldest programs that we've had. Just Google Socialist Can, 1 hour left, and you'll see dozens of programs that we have already done that are right there on the internet. We do post it on our Facebook page, which is on Socialist Can or Socialist Connection Action Network, and we post that on a weekly basis where you can be able to go and see the link, where all you have to do is just click on the link at the time the show comes on, and you can be able to listen to the whole program. In regards to the program, our meeting coming up in August, it'll be August 10th at the Unitarian Church in Austin, Texas, and it will be on the 10th of August, and it will be from 8 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock that evening. It's a means by which we can come together, meet for the first time, meet other members within the group, and also we're going to be discussing how we're going to organize on a national level. We like to invite anyone to come and participate and join us for that event.
And let us know by going on the event on the Socialist Can Facebook page. It'll be the first thing in the feed, and let us know so we know how many people are coming.
Yeah, and we should say, you know, one of the reasons. Go ahead.
One other thing I just wanted to mention, people can always go to Socialist Connection Action Network. I always encourage you just to send us a message. We always respond.
Okay.
And I'd just like to point out, one of the reasons we do this program is because we think it's important that working people begin to express their views. All too often, working people are too timid, and they're not saying what's on their mind. And, you know, we would hope more people would join us in expressing our opinions and views.
Well, thanks for joining us, Stuart, and we'll be talking to you again on Wednesday.
I appreciate the invitation. Thanks again, Alan. Thank you, Deborah. Looking forward to talking on Wednesday.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good night.
All right.
You too.